is working. So I don't know. I hope we will. Maybe we should talk about it at some point and see what can be done to make it better. The other bit of apology is. So it's actually a subject. So you requested the subject. You wanted me to talk about associators in the growth and the impact model group. It's a subject that I worked on about 20 years ago, and the paper that I'm basing over everything on was written about 20 years ago. And I have to admit that I don't have perfect memory. So I mean. Basically, I watched my own talk on the subject this morning and recycled material from there, and I hope I remember well enough to tell you something meaningful, okay? Anyway, so the topic is the Grothendieck Tarnmuller group. It has value, it has applications. I'll show you in a little bit. It's also a little bit of a debt certificate, so kind of people say the Grothendieck Tarnmuller group, and then everybody says, woo, what an exciting topic. So I want to tell you what it is about. Okay, let's move on, sorry. Maybe before I start, my talk and the handout and all that are available on the URL, which I hope you can see on your big screen. Yes. And if we're testing technology, is my technology of pointing working? So can you see what I'm pointing at?
Yes.
No.
Not on the big screen. Not only on the small TV screen.
Right. No, I'm only pointing on the small screen.
Yes. Yes.
Because I figured it, I could use the mouse to point, but I figured it would be actually easier for me if I use the ring pointer. So can you see what I'm pointing at?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. You know, back 5 years ago, I had a newly made a free calculator, and you know, all the calculations that I do, basically everything about the Grothendieck Tarnmuller group is somehow about freely algebras. Freely algebras enter in every page. So I wrote a little calculator that can do pretty much arbitrary computations in freely algebras, and I basically, you can go to this URL and you'll find that there is a whole paper about it in a specific context, but basically this is an advertisement. You might find it useful in other places too. Finally, my talk follows the handout, and I hope all of you are holding a copy. And my talk also follows an old paper by Greenfield from 1991. Here is a picture of Greenfield. Here are like two quotes from this paper. And the quotes are actually maybe I should have shown this one first. I'm sorry, I'm a bit disorganized. So, if you want, this is another picture of Greenfold. But it's meant to, you might think it's kind of unkind, but I really mean it to be really the greatest compliment that can be. So, I mean, he's the master Jedi. And he knows everything, and he speaks in a language that's sometimes a bit hard to understand, but basically all we do is to try to interpret him. So, in his paper in which he introduced the Grothendieck Tarnmuller group, he introduces it as follows, and it's really, really hard to digest. And partially, and it's completely clear to me that he understood everything that was there. story that I'm going to talk about, but somehow it's not written in this language. So, you know, if you read his papers, you find that he defines a group GRT and a group GT, and he defines them by a certain insane-looking relations that are very, you know, don't seem to mean anything. And you know, so these are, so basically, the group GRT is the group of elements that satisfy the equations. Very hard to see what these equations mean. And then under the composition law, written over here, and just digesting what the composition law says, it's complicated, and it's not even clear why it's a composition law, why is it associative. I mean, everything about it is hard. And then he says, okay, it has a Lie algebra, and the Lie algebra is again written by, given by some complicated equations. So it's basically very hard to digest. And then finally, he proves a theorem. And the theorem is that this group acts on some set M of K, and the action is free and transitive. And of course it's proven, here is the proof. But it would take you days to digest it. So the purpose of my talk is really to go back to you know, what the Master Jedi is saying and translate it to simpler English. Okay? How is it going, by the way? Sorry, somehow, much as I tried to make it feel like a normal talk in a normal room, I don't see your faces as clearly. I don't get feedback. I don't actually know if you hear me even.
We hear you very well.
Seems okay. To be all working.
Let me move on and see how it works. Okay. So, the main structure is written in the back of your handout in two colors. So the global structure is in green and the details are in black, and I hope you can tell green from black, and I hope you can see which is which. So basically, I'm going to construct for you a certain algebraic object, a certain algebraic structure B. So B is, the letter B comes from braids. So it has something to do with braids. Basically, it braids along with many operations and various bells and whistles attached, so many further operations that you allow to do on braids. And out of this algebraic structure, so this algebraic structure will turn out to be filtered, and in fact, it's almost completely automatic. So basically, every algebraic structure you start with has some automatic filtration. I will explain it in a few minutes. So basically, the fact that it's filtered is nothing extraordinary. You could have started with anything, and it would be filtered in a similar way. Thank you for zooming in. And the moment you have a filtered object, it has an associated grade. So C is the associated grade of B. And the associated grade of something filtered is always isomorphic, at least as a vector space, to the thing itself. So But it may or may not be isomorphic in a way that preserves the structure. So the set ASSO, or if you want, this is the beginning of the word associator, but for now it's just the set of all isomorphisms from the structure B to the structure C, which preserve the structure. Okay, which respect all the operations that are available on both sides. so you can see it's a set, right? It's made out of many arrows. Each arrow is an isomorphism, and I put a sort of set symbol, a bundle, a lasso around them to indicate that I think about the set of all of them. And then, automatically, the moment you have the set of isomorphism between two sets, there are two groups that act on it. The group of automorphism of the object on the left, and the group of automorphisms of the object on the right. And these are the two groups, GT and GRD, that Drinkfeld is talking about. Okay? Now, the two groups are of course isomorphic, because the two structures are isomorphic, so the groups of automorphisms are isomorphic. But the isomorphism between B and C is not canonical, and therefore also the isomorphism between GT and GRT is not canonical. So this is in a nutshell what is going to happen. And the next thing I have to do is to tell you the details. So, but maybe even before the details, let me start with a baby example, which is the pure gray group. So I'm going to switch to the blackboard. Let me know if there is a problem seeing it. Okay? So, basically the point is that I want to give, so the principle that, the principle on the previous slide, the principle here is completely general. It happens in a vast number of situations. And I want to give you one of the simplest situations in which it happens and in which it is non-trivial. The structure I want to talk about right now is the pure gray group on N strands. So what do I have to say about it? So first of all, the pure gray group on N strands, I hope you all know what it is, but let me try to remind you, and I hope the font I'm using is sufficiently large that you can see me.
Yes. Yes.
That you can read it. Can you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Basically it's the group of grades. So, I don't know, here is a grade. Except, I want my grades to be pure, so every grade induces a permutation, and I want this permutation to be the identity permutation. So, for example, I could make this grade pure by bringing the strands back to where they started by adding a few more crossings. So here is an example of a pure grade, and here n is equal to 3, so it has 1, 2, and 3 strands. And you compose such things by stacking them on top of each other. Now, the moment you have a group, and in fact this is any group, I'm going to use it for pure grades, but I could have started with any group whatsoever, you can consider its group ring. So let's call it QPBN, PBN, so the group of formal linear combinations of elements of BN, meaning the group of formal sums of the form, sum AI BI, where BI is a braid and AI is a rational number. Okay? And the moment you have the group ring, it automatically has so-called augmentation ideal. So the augmentation ideal is the set of linear combinations which are in which the sum of the coefficients is equal to 0. So it's the set of all sum AI BI such that, you know, I probably didn't give myself enough space. Let's move this bar actually far away. So it's the set of linear combinations whose sum of coefficients is equal to 0. And alternatively, it's the set. It's the ideal in the group ring generated by differences, by B1 minus B2, where B1 and B2 are braids. Now, the moment you have an ideal, you can consider its powers. So let's consider the first power, that's the ideal itself. Let's consider the zero power. By definition, this is the whole thing. But the more interesting direction is that you can consider the square, the cube, the fourth power, etc. And it's a descending sequence of ideals inside the group ring. Okay? So this is a descending filtration of the group ring. Now, the moment you have a descending filtration, can look at it associated graded. The associated graded is, you can look at two things, even before that. You can look at quotients and the inverse limit of quotients and the associated graded. So let me explain. So first of all, you can look at QPBN parentheses M, and in fact, I think I don't even need to write the Q here, so let me do it in tau. So you can look at PBN, the M approximation. So this is PBN or QPBN, forgetting all the information which is in the M plus first ideal or beyond. So in other words, it's PBN, it's QPBN modulo the M plus first power of the ideal. So it's grades forgetting a lot of information or forgetting some information, and basically when you raise M, this idea, this power of the ideal becomes smaller and smaller, and so you forget less and less information, and so in some sense this is a sequence of approximations for the group, okay, or for the group ring. Now, the moment you have, so this is an inverse system of groups, namely, PBM plus 1 maps into PBM, which in itself maps into PBM minus 1, so you can form the inverse limit. So let me define PBN hat to be the inverse limit as M goes to infinity. Can you still see that?
Barely.
This should be at the very bottom of your screen.
It's cut off.
Okay. Sorry?
It's cut off.
It's cut off where? At the arrow, below?
We can't see the arrow.
You know what? Let me move the camera just a tiny bit. Is it better?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so it's the limit, the inverse limit of all PBNs. Okay, so roughly speaking, this is the B side of the story I told you in the beginning. I told you about in the beginning. So each of these possibilities, or really, there are several possibilities for the B side. Either you fix the number M and you look at PBN cut off at the M plus first power of the ideal, so this is one possibility for the B side, or you look at the inverse of all or limit of all of them, and that's the other side, the other possibility. But each of these things inherits a filtration from the group ring itself. Namely, the group ring, well, I mean, PVN maps into PVNM, and so each of these ideals projects into the quotients, and therefore also into the inverse limit, and therefore you get the infiltration of ideals inside both here and here. In the case of PVM, it's a finite sequence of ideals, it's a finite filtration, because by definition, the m plus first ideal here gets mapped to zero here. Okay? But over here, it's in PVM hat, it's an infinite system of, it's an infinite decreasing filtration, or potentially an infinite decreasing filtration. Okay. Now, the moment you have a filtered space, you can look at its associated graded. So, the associated graded, in general, is the direct sum of the quotients of, or sorry, the infinite direct sum, so the direct product, of the quotients of successive filtrations. So basically, for PBN hat, so GER of PBN hat will be the infinite direct sum, so really the direct product of the k filtration modulo the k plus first filtration. So the k filtration is simply whatever is generated by I to the k plus first filtration is whatever is generated by I to the k plus one. So GER of PB of PBN hat is simply this infinite direct sum. And similarly, GER of PBN, if it's chopped at level m or level m plus one, then simply you get here the direct sum k goes from zero to m of I to the k modulo I to the k plus one. Okay? Good. So definition. In expansion for this situation is a map Z going from either one of these spaces to its associated graded. So going from B to C, where B is, for example, PBN hat, and C is GER of PBN hat, or the chopped possibility, such that, I can give you the condition either abstractly or concretely. So abstractly is the following. So you see, this is a filtered object. This is a graded object. A graded object is automatically also filtered, because you can look at the sum of degrees above a certain degree, and then that forms a filtration. So you can think of both of these as being, so B is inherently filtered, and C has a filtration which is induced from the grading. Now, so you want Z to be a filtration-preserving map, and the moment you have a filtration-preserving map, you can take GER, so the operation associated graded is a functor. So you can take GER of Z, and you get, well, so you get a map GER of Z going from GER B into GER C. But girl B is actually C. And by definition, the associated grade of the filtration coming from a gradation is back the same, is back the same gradation. So this is also back again C. So girl Z will be going from C to C. And the condition is that girl Z will be the identity map. Okay? Am I totally wasting your time? So again, one disadvantage of this remote thing is that I didn't talk to you in advance. I don't know you very well. I know some of you. So I don't know if I'm speaking about things that you all know. Basically, am I wasting your time or should I continue?
Please continue.
Please continue.
So I mean, if you don't, okay.
Drawer, can you hear us asking questions?
What?
Can we ask a question? Can you hear us?
You can ask questions, but perhaps you should either pass around the microphone or come closer to your microphone.
Is this the mic? Is this better?
It's perfect.
Perfect. So Z preserves what structures? I mean, B is, in this case, a ring, and C is, I don't know what C is. So it's just a linear map of vector spaces?
At the moment, I wasn't clear about it. At the moment, it's just a linear map of vector spaces.
Okay.
I will upgrade it later. Okay? Or you know what? Why don't I upgrade it now, since you've asked? So basically, whatever operation there exists on B, if the operation itself respects the filtration, it induces a corresponding operation on C. This is again the fact that GER is a functor. So, in our case, the only operation I'm really considering is well, it's a group, so I'm considering only the multiplication operation. So, PBN is a group, so QPBN is an algebra. So, B is an algebra, and its associated algebra is, associated graded is an algebra again. And so I could add a word here. I could add the word homomorphic. And if I add the word homomorphic, I mean an expansion which preserves the structure, which in our case just means algebra. Okay? Back when I talked about it in 5 years ago, the talk that I listened to this morning, I had less time, so I was rushing. So now I don't want to rush, I want to explain the word expansion. Maybe you've heard it 7 times, and if so, please stop me. But I think it's sort of valuable to know, to see the example which I'm about to show, which tells you why this is natural. So, here is an example. So in fact, everything, well, I took as a starting point a group and its group ring, but I could have started with any ring and any ideal, and I could have done the exact same construction, and I could have made the exact same definition and asked myself if I can find expansions or not. So the one example that I want you to keep in mind is the examples where the ring is C infinity, so infinite, so smooth functions on R to the N, and the ideal is the set of functions which vanish at zero. So it kind of sort of reminds you, should remind you of the augmentation ideal, though it's slightly different. Okay? So in this case, I to the k is vanish at least n times the zero. So functions vanishing, sorry, k times, vanishing k times at zero. And then I to the k modulo I to the k plus 1 will be functions that vanish k times, that have an order k 0 at 0, modulo functions that have an order k plus 1, so while ignoring functions that vanish more than k times at 0. So that's isomorphic to monomials or polynomials of degree exactly k at zero. Okay? So this is exactly, not at zero, just polynomials of degree exactly k. Okay, so this is homogeneous degree k polynomials. Okay? So C is the infinite direct sum of all of these homogeneous polynomials, but the infinite direct sum of homogeneous polynomials is precisely power series. So this is a power series on R to the n. Okay? And the target space, my domain space, so the domain space B is the inverse limit of R modulo I to the k. But the only thing I want you to know, many times the way I wrote it is I to the k plus 1, but that doesn't really matter. And the only thing I really want you to know about it is that R itself maps into it. Sorry. So if this is B, then R itself clearly maps into it because it maps into each factor. Furthermore, if you have the image of R is dense. So if you have a map out of B, then it is determined by its values on R. So instead of thinking of the expansion as a map from B to C, I could simply think of it as a map on R. Okay? So C will simply be a map from R into C, which satisfies the condition written here. Okay? So R is C infinity functions, C is power series, and you can guess for yourself what an example for Z would be, right? You want the map from C infinity functions to power series, and the first thing that comes to mind is the Taylor expansion. So, if the only condition you put is the condition written here, so if you don't insist on preserving an algebraic structure, then in fact there are many expansions, not just the Taylor expansion. But if you add the condition that Z should be homomorphic with respect to multiplication on C infinity, and in fact there is also a co-multiplication, and you have to be a little bit careful about the analytic details, but you can make it that precise, and then you can look for expansions that respect both the product and the co-product on C infinity functions and power series, and then the unique example is the Taylor expansion. Okay? So, hence the reason for the name. Okay? Good. Are you still with me?
Yes.
Okay. I want to go back. So now that I've explained the name, I want to go back to the bread group and tell you more about what happens there. So I want to look for expansion B going from one of my choices of B, but that's the same as saying going from the pure grade group itself into one of my choices for the spaces C, and I have to tell you what C is. Okay? So C is some sum or direct sum of or completed sum of ik modulo ik plus 1. And I want to tell you what C looks like. So I claim that this, or you know, let me write it differently. So no. So okay. So here I should be writing one of my choices. So either C hat or CM. Okay. And I claim that there is some single algebra C. The algebra C is the direct sum of ik modulo ik plus 1, such that C hat is the completion of this algebra and Cm is the cropping of this algebra at degree n plus 1, so you keep everything of degree higher than n plus 1. This is so far obvious. But I want to describe what this algebra is. So I claim that the algebra C is the algebra generated by symbols T, I, J, where I and J run from 1 to N. Remember, I'm talking about grades with N strands. And let me introduce a convention. So whenever two indices appear in the same equation, I will automatically assume that they're different. So when I write this, I automatically mean that I is different than J. Okay? I could have added this here, but I want the convention to imply it automatically. So I is different from J. And I want these symbols to be symmetric, so Tij is actually equal to Tji. I'm considering these symbols to have degree 1, so the algebra that they generate will be graded. And I then mod out by two relations. So one relation is the so-called locality relation, and the other relation is the 4T relation, and let me write them here. So the locality relation says that Tij commutes with TKL, so the commutator of Tij with TKL is equal to 0. But remember my convention. My convention is that whenever indices appear in the same equation, they're all different. So I is different from J, and basically these are four distinct indices. So this relation does not mean that the algebra is commutative. Okay, I mean, because there are restrictions on what the indices could be. And in fact, there is a second relation, the 4T relation. And the 4T relation tells you what to do if two of the indices are equal. Okay? So it's the relation which says that T Tij dot til, no, ik, commutes with tjk. So, okay? Good. So, maybe before continuing, let me give you a plausibility argument for why this might be true. Okay, not a complete proof. The proof is actually a bit involved. But let me give you a plausibility argument. So why does it make sense? So the group we started from, we started from the group PBN, and the pure bright group on n strand is generated, the standard generators are element sigma ij, which look like the following. So basically you take n vertical strands, you mark strand number I, you mark strand number j, and sigma ij is the pure braid in which strand number j goes behind a number of strands, as many as it needs to, and then behind strand I, and then comes back going over strand I, and then again under everything on the way, and back to its place. So this is a pure braid, and you can check that these pure braids generate PBN. I'm not going to write the relations, but these are the generators. Okay? So, if I am claiming that the algebra C that I wrote here is isomorphic to this direct sum, then I should be able to construct a map going this way. So let me tell you what this map is. So the map is the map which maps Tij to sigma ij minus 1. Sigma ij minus 1 is an element of the augmentation I did, right? Because the sum of the coefficients is 1, is 0. Okay? So basically, if I apply it to a product, so if I have something of the form product over alpha, alpha goes from 1 to k, of ti alpha j alpha, then I will be mapping it to a product. These are ordered products. Okay, the algebra is not commutative, so these are, I keep the order. So this will go to a product as alpha goes from 1 to k of sigma I alpha j alpha minus 1. And clearly, this is the augmentation ideal to the power k. And then the map going from C to, the map going from here to here, I don't know what I should call it, let's call it iota. So the map iota, is defined in this way, modulo, except when you write the right hand side, you ignore, you mod it out by I to the k plus 1. You project to the quotient modulo I to the k plus 1. Okay? Now, the main thing that I need to check is that the map respects the relations written here. So let me ignore the first relation, it's a bit easy, and tell you the main point. The main point is the relation written here, the so-called 4T relation. So again, maybe I'm wasting your time, I'm not sure. Am I?
No.
You're not.
Okay. I'm learning my lessons too. It's I I should have put you on a huge screen so that I can actually see your faces. Anyway, somehow this feedback is really missing. Okay, anyway, so I need to tell you that the map respects this relation. Very briefly, here is how it goes. So the easiest way to do it is to sort of slightly extend what I mean by grades. So let me declare that if I write a crossing with a double point, with a dot on top of it, and I call it the double point, instead of an overcrossing or another crossing, then this is really stands for, so this is not a new object, it's just a new notation. It's notation for having over minus under. Okay? So you can complain that this is not a pure grade, but what I mean this is sort of a local notation. So in other words, you can extend it. You can extend both sides by adding more crossings until it becomes a pure grade, and then the double point will represent a difference of two grades, one which is obtained by taking an overcrossing and extending it in a certain way, and the other one is obtained by taking another crossing and extending it the same way. Okay? So, for example, consider the generator sigma ij, and let me just copy it, so let me write it again. So it looks like this, you highlight I, you highlight j, you go from j to I, and then under and back again. And now, if I replace the overcrossing here with a double point, then the double point stands for an overcrossing minus an undercrossing. If you replace it by an overcrossing, then so this really stands for what you get when you replace it by an overcrossing, which would be a sigma ij. So this is a sigma ij. And if you replace it by an undercrossing, well, so if this small double point is replaced by the same type of crossing as that, then you can take this whole finger and slide it back into to the right. So this is sigma ij minus 1. So really, a double point somehow represents a tij. Or more precisely, this is iota of Tij. So a lot of Tij is a double point between strand I and strand j. And now I can tell you about this relation. So consider the following situation. So I have a double point, and let's assume that these strands are j and k, and there is a third strand I, which goes like that. And again, don't complain that this isn't a pure grade, because really, I mean, this is a local picture, and you complete it to be a pure grade in some way. Okay? And then, well, strand I passes under everything, so I can slide it out. I can slide it out no matter if this double point is interpreted to be an overcrossing or an undercrossing. In either case, I can slide it out. Likewise, you could consider the braid, or the linear combination of braids, in which I goes over everything. So it looks more like this. Okay? And again, you could slide strand I out, and therefore the two sides here are equal. Well, to say that they're equal is the same as saying that the difference is equal to zero. And this difference is equal to zero in the pure brain group, or more precisely, in the group brain of the pure brain group. Now, but I could also represent this, I could also compute this difference in a different way. I could flip this crossing, replace under by over, then I could flip this crossing, then I could flip this crossing, then I could flip that crossing, and after four flips, I will be getting from here to here. So this is also a sum of four flips. So let me write just one of them, just for the, I'll write the summation symbol, and like the typical element would look like, you flip two, you haven't flipped this one, and this one is being flipped, so it corresponds to another point. Okay? So the lesson we learned is that the sum of four brains that have two double points each is equal to zero. But this can be read as lying in the image of iota. And in the image of iota is precisely the image of that. So if you expand this, this is again a product of a sum or a sum with signs of four terms, each of which is a product of two t's. And each t corresponds to a double point. So it's the two things are of the same nature, and if you look at them, they're the same. So what I learned is that this relation is satisfied this is the key to proving why iota respects this relation. Okay? I hope you're still with me. And let me briefly summarize. Instead of summarizing, let me go back to the projection. So I'm again looking at here, and my conclusion is that constructing an expansion for the brain group, so here is an element of the brain group, is the same as mapping the pure brain group into its associated gradient, which is essentially the algebra written here, so the algebra generated by Tij modulo the relations written here. By the way, it's kind of nice to draw these relations graphically, the elements of the algebra graphically, and I think the pictures explain the conventions sufficiently well. So if you take T1 3 times T1 3 times T1 2 times T2 3, so I write three vertical strands, and I connect 1 and 3, and then 1 and 3, and then 1 and 2, and then 2 and 3. So basically, each Tij corresponds to a horizontal chord. And then the 4D relation becomes this combination of pictures. And really, I want to look at maps from brains into chord diagrams, which are multiplicative. Several things to say. First of all, this is hard. It's surprisingly difficult, and in fact, I think it's not terribly difficult to construct a multiplicative map, but there is also a coproduct of the blueprint, and it induces the coproduct of chord diagrams, and in fact, I don't know I don't know a purely algebraic construction of an expansion, even in this case. So, I mean, even in the baby example, things are not understood. Second point, and I think I'm again briefly back to the blackboard. So in our case, an expansion is a map from PBN into chord diagrams on N strands. So chord diagrams on N strands are precisely the picture drawn here, modulo relations. It's easy to check that, if you complete here, or if you load out by degree higher than M, so I wrote two things here, but I meant either one of them, then an expansion is an isomorphism. So this is already an example of the BC picture that we talked about before, that I mentioned before. So already here, the set of ordinary functions, so you can call it, EF of P, okay? So the set of all expansions is acted on by transitively by two groups. So it has two groups acting on it. You can call one of them the Grothendieck factor per group of braids, and the other one the graded Grothendieck factor per group of braids. And I told you that this was the Bayes example, but in fact, these groups, to the best of my knowledge, is not understood. To the best of my knowledge, people study the more sophisticated example that I will explain in a minute, but never studied these groups. So I don't know anything about these groups. I don't know. Does anybody know? Maybe somebody in the audience knows better than me. In principle, it's not very difficult to write what these groups are, and in fact, I rewrite what sort of more complicated versions of these groups are. But again, nobody looked at it. Here is a simple question. Okay, here are two questions for which I don't know the answer. Okay, one is dimensions. So if you look at the M case, so if you crop in degree M plus one, then this becomes a finite dimensional group. What is the dimension? I don't know. Okay? And the second question is actually more about the set of expansions. So in fact, the set of expansions it depends in which context. I can look at infinite expansions, or I can look at expansions to degree n. So quite clearly, if you have an expansion to degree n, so basically it's an expansion, it's an expansion for pure braids, so the pure braid group itself maps into this, so you have a map which works up to degree m, clearly such a map projects to an expansion to degree n minus 1. Okay? If you know more, you can forget some and then you know less. But I don't know if this is surjective. And this might be my limited state of knowledge, but maybe somebody in the audience should jump and tell you do know. But it might be that this is an open problem. I don't know that anybody knows. Okay? And why is it relevant? Why does it matter? Basically, if this map is surjective, it means that you can construct expansions degree by degree. no matter, you know, you can construct it. So you can construct an expansion to degree n minus 1. No matter which one you choose, you can lift it to an expansion in degree 1 more. And then by induction, you can lift it on and on, and eventually you can get an overall expansion. And again, I don't know if this is, I don't know it in this case. I know it in the case that follows, but not in this one. And two more things before I move to the real case. Who cares? So why care? So why care? And really I mean about expansion. Now, if I'm asking myself, can I construct an expansion degree by degree inductively? Why at all should I care? So let me give you two answers. And both of these answers are, you'll see. So answer number one, an expansion would be a map from BDN into CDN. And you can restrict it to a finite degree. And then this is a space of complicated topological objects. And this is a space defined completely combinatorially in some algebraic manner. And in fact, well, I didn't go through it, you know, if you think a bit harder, you find that this algebra C, the target space, CD, is completely described in terms of free algebra. So it's kind of a controlled algebraic object. But the moment you have a map like this, which respects the operations, it allows you to translate topological questions to algebraic questions. And then perhaps answer hard topological questions using algebra. So for example, you can ask yourself, given a grade, so suppose you have a grade here, you can ask yourself, does there exist a grade, what should I call it, beta, such that B is the square of beta? Is a given grade a square? Well, if you compute C of B and the image is not a square, then you know that B wasn't a square to start with. Okay? So that's an example of a topology question that becomes an algebra question here. Now,
excuse me.
This particular question is not very exciting, but as I said, further examples of this principle become more exciting topological questions. Okay, so that's one reason. And the second reason.
Excuse me, Paul. Can you say more about
how. Sorry,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you say more about how the right-hand side is described in terms of the algebras?
Yes, it will take me a bit aside. Should I?
Probably not.
You know, maybe I will very, very quickly, okay? And in fact, it's actually easier to tell it on the left-hand side. Okay? Do you know what combinative rate is? So, there is a standard claim which says that every grade can be brought to the following form. So, goes around the first run the number of times, then comes back to place, and then from that point on, the first and second strand will never move again. Then there is a stage in which the third strand wanders between the first and the second strand a number of times, comes back to place, and from that point on, it will not move again. So basically, first, so the second goes around the first, then the third goes around the first and the second, and then it continues like that. So the next step, the third strand, wraps around, well, the third strand goes vertical and then wraps around the first three and then comes back to place and never moves again. So the fact that this is possible is actually easy. Because what you do is, okay, you bring, suppose you already knew how to bring the brain into a form in which the first three strands have the right behavior. The fourth strand that you draw in your head, unfortunately, might go somewhere in between these. Okay? So, you make the first three strands out of some hard material. Here is an example. So you make the first, thanks Esther Dalvin for the object. So you make the first three strands out of some hard material, and the fourth one will somehow be entangled in between them, and it's made out of some soft material, a USB cable in our case. But now, the thing is that I'm not sure how to hold it while, but basically you can pull the soft material up. So, right, if you have some, move the camera a bit, can you see it?
Yeah, yes.
Is it within your image?
Yes. Yeah.
I need a yes or a no.
Yeah, yes.
So, okay, so if I have a soft material here, I can just slide it out. And as I slide it out, it will get kind of messed up. But eventually I can slide it to the top. Basically, the top is open. The top is open, except really you should be thinking of this as continuing to infinity. So, so I can bring this to... red is all the way at the top. But now I've done the next step in the induction. Okay? But if you think about it, this means that the pure grade group on n strands is a free group on one letter. So this is the free group on one letter, times sets theoretically. So after the first phase, you have the third strand wrapping between among the other two, but that just means a path in the complement of two points. That's an element of the free group on two letters. So with F1 times F2 times F3 times F4, so and so on, up to N-1, I believe. Now, this is happening on the level of braids, but now you have to believe me that on the level of associated gradients, it will become, the same thing will be true with the free group replaced by the 3D algebra. Okay? So that's basically why it's true without any details. Okay. Okay, and here's the second point why I care. So, so an expansion Z is what I wrote here, but suppose you compose it with some map psi, with some homogeneous map phi, into your ground field. So homogeneous means that it is supported on some fixed degree elements here. Okay? Then the composition will be a map from BBN into Q. And if you know what finite type invariants, you can check that this will be a finite type invariant. And furthermore, you can check that all finite type invariants arise in this way. So an alternative way for a finite type invariant is, sorry, for an expansion, is a universal finite type invariant. Okay? Okay. Can I move on?
Yes. Yeah.
So where are we? Here. Okay. So that was the basic case. Now I want to tell you about the full case. So again, I want to give you a complete description of the B side in the case of the Grothendieck Hartree group. So the B side in the case of the Grothendieck Hartree group is a bit more complicated. So instead of braids, you talk about parenthesized braids, and they form a category, and I will explain what they are in a minute. In addition, you have, so the structure is more complicated. Instead of simply braids, it's parenthesized braids. There is a skeleton functor, which goes from parenthesized braids to parenthesized permutations. And then there are doubling and strand insertion maps, DI. And then there are strand deletion maps, SI. And then there is a coproduct box, which I will barely mention. And then there is a base element, sigma, which I will mention. Okay? Now let's see what each of these things are. So first of all, parenthesized braids are braids which are not necessarily pure. So it's moved out of pure braids. But they are decorated with a permutation, sorry, with a parenthesization at the bottom and a parenthesization at the top. So a parenthesization is basically I think the picture is explained it. So basically, it's a you put a dot at the end of each strand, and then you sort of think of these dots as if they live as if they live in some algebra, and a parenthesization is a choice of an ordering how to multiply them. Basically, you know, you first multiply the first two, then in this case you multiply by the third, and here you multiply by the fourth. At the top we have a different parenthesization in which we first multiply one and two, and then we multiply, and at the same time in which we multiply three and four, and then we multiply one, two, to three, four. So a parenthesization is just a choice of, way to parenthesize an object. By the way, a different way of saying it is to say that, I'm again using the blackboard. So suppose I have a braid with, in fact, that exact same braid. So a different way to say parenthesization is to say that I choose a binary tree for the bottom and for the top that sort of combines all the strands into one. So the binary tree corresponding to here, to this picture, would be the tree where you first combine these two, then you merge them into the third, then you merge them into the fourth. The binary tree corresponding to the right hand side, to the top here, would be you first combine these two, and at the same time combine these two, and then combine the two pairs. So somehow every parameterized braid also corresponds to some knotted graph. So remember that over here I have a braid, so I don't know, this could connect in some way. And then overall we got a knotted graph. Well, it's a knotted graph that arises from a braid, but somewhere else I could be talking about general knotted graphs. And there would be an analog theory, a theory analogous to everything that we talked about. Okay? For the purpose of parenthesized brains, some of the way people like to write things, so is you indicate the parenthesized, the parenthesization, by choosing a distance scale. So basically, nearby things get multiplied first. So if I write this combination, it means you parenthesize to the left. And if I write this combination, then it means you parenthesize to the right. If I wanted to write these things as binary trees, this would be the binary tree that looks like this, and this would be the binary tree that looks like this. Okay? Anyway, the parenthesized braid on the left is an example. So it's the identity braid. Well, as a braid, it's the trivial braid. But I don't think of it as an idea. It's not an identity element because it goes from different objects, between different objects in my category. Right? It goes from the left parenthetization to the right parenthetization. This morphism will later be called A. Okay. Parenthesized braids form a category. The objects being parenthetizations, the morphisms I've just described, and you can compose them by stacking. So basically, if you have, you know, two braids, B1 and B2, and the parenthetization at the top of B1 is the same as the parenthetization at the bottom of B2, you stack them on top of each other and forget the parenthetization in the middle. Okay, that's the composition. So as a category, I just described PAB, but then PAB has some additional structure. It has a skeleton functor. The skeleton functor maps every parenthesized braid to its skeleton. Its skeleton is simply what you get when you basically make these strands transparent to each other. You allow them to cross freely. So what remains of a braid is a permutation. But I think the parenthetizations at the bottom and at the top. So the target of the skeleton functor is the category of parenthesized permutations. And I'm not going to define a parenthesized permutation, but I think it's pretty clear what it is. Well, you know, if you want, I can just define it, okay? So a parenthesized permutation is a permutation at the bottom, a parenthetization at the bottom, a parenthetization at the top, and then some permutation in between without worrying about which one is over and which one is under. Okay. Now, Well, the what will replace the group ring in our case will be, so I will allow linear combinations of parenthesized braids, but I will only allow it if the skeleton underlying is the same. Okay? So, in other words, well, sigma ij minus 1 is an allowed linear combination because the skeletons are the same, so this is okay, but also over minus under is okay, so this is also okay, but I'm not allowing linear combinations like this where the skeletons are different. Okay, so the underlying permutations are different. Now, it's very easy to formalize. Really what I mean is that an element in the category PAB is an ordered pair, a parenthesized permutation, and then a linear combination of parenthesized braids whose underlying skeleton is a permutation. Okay? Good. And the moment I've allowed linear combinations, I can talk about augmentation ideal in exactly the same way. So basically, this will be linear combinations of same skeleton braids in which the sum of coefficients is equal to 1, is equal to 0. And then you can talk about products or powers of this augmentation idea. So powers of the augmentation idea will be you basically multiply a bunch of morphisms, each of which is in the ideal. Okay? So therefore the definitions PAB hat and PAB m make sense just as before. I still have to tell you what are DI, SI, box, and sigma. So, let's start with DI. So, it's on an example. So, if you're looking at the two-strand braid, here is the two-strand braid, D0 of it would turn it into a three-strand braid by adding a vertical strand on the left, which does not interact with anything and which is far away in the sense of the parenthetization. Okay? D3 will add a third strand on the right, and again, vertical, not interacting with anything, and far away in the sense of the parenthetization. And finally, if you have a braid with n strand, or a parenthesized braid with n strand, di, when I runs from 1 to n, so when I refers to one of the strands, when I is not too far to the left or too far to the right, then it means double that strand. So for example, D2 of the three-strand braid means when you count things at the bottom, so 1, 2, 3, this is strand 2, so you double strand 2, so now it became a pair of strands, and you make these two strands infinitesimally close to each other. Or what I really mean by that is that in the parenthetization, they are parenthesized as innermost, both in the domain and in the target. Okay? Likewise, there is an operation S, there are operations SI. The operation SI just means drop strand number I. So applying S2 to a complicated parenthesized phrase means you count at the bottom, strand number 2 is this one. If I drop strand number 2, I'm left with this thinker braid, parenthesized braid on the left. Okay? The operation, the co-product I want to skip. There is nothing exciting about it. Roughly speaking, it's the analog of the co-product in group rings. So if you have a group ring, you always have a map into QG co-product, into QG tensor QG, and the map is defined by sending any group element into this group element tensor itself. In our case, I will have to explain what I mean by, well, parenthesized braids, tensor parenthesized braids. I will have to explain how to take basically this tensor product of categories, if you wish. And, well, informally, it will just mean, so basically, things here are pairs of group elements. And in a similar way, I would have to look at pairs of parenthesized braids with matching skeletons. And then the map will define, you'll have every braid into the pair which has this braid twice. Okay? So roughly that's what box is, but I think I'd rather not go into details.
So drawer.
In the book, yes.
Where do these D and S operations live? Like they're taking you, they seem to act on morphisms in the category.
They act on morphisms. So they act on morphisms. They map, and in fact they're not even functors. But they map morphisms into morphisms with either one strand less or one strand more. Okay? If you were interested in the theory of braids, they would be rather natural things to study. These are things you can do with braids. So, you know, the moment you can do them, why not add them to the structure that you want to study? Okay. And finally, I need to tell you what is sigma, and I think my picture for some reason doesn't show it, but sigma is this particular braid. You can think of it as, well, it's just a base point. It's sort of like a base point in a topological space. I highlight this particular braid. Okay? Good. Now, in principle, in some sense, I'm done. My story is over. I don't need to tell you anything more. Because I've defined an object PAB, parenthesized braids. It comes with all sorts of further operations, so it comes with some further annotations, if you wish. But it automatically has an augmentation idea. In fact, every algebraic object has an alpha. You can turn it into you can allow linear combinations and look at formal linear combinations with sum of coefficients equal to zero. So it automatically has an augmentation ideal, and automatically has a filtration, and automatically has an associated gradient. And so automatically there is an associated graded space for which I choose the name for parenthesized core diagram. But you know, it doesn't matter, you can call it whatever you want. The point is that this is canonically defined, canonically constructed out of this. So in principle, you can go home and figure it out on your own. And then the question whether an expansion exists is completely canonical. You already know what it is. An expansion would be a map from this to that, which respects all the structure and which covers the identity in this in the sense that I described before. The moment so now you can look at the set of all expansions, call it, I don't know why, but you can call it ASSO. Okay? And automatically it has two groups acting on it. And I'm done explaining to you what the Grothendieck-Taubner group is. The Grothendieck-Taubner group is the group of automorphisms of this structure. GRT is the group of automorphism of this structure, which was also fully defined. Okay? So in some sense I'm done. But you probably want to see more. Okay, so let me show some more. So let me describe the C side now. And I will describe it in some detail, but the details are forced. I don't make any choices. So the C side, CM, will again be a category with a skeleton factor, with DI maps, with SI maps, with box, and with a base point. Core diagram will be basically elements of this algebra that I mentioned before, the algebra generated by TRGen. So basically, pictures with horizontal chords on them, except now that my brains are not pure, my strands can also carry a permutation. So, and also a parenthetization. So, a parenthesized chord diagram will be a parenthetization at the bottom, parenthetization at the top, a parenthesized permutation in between, and then a bunch of horizontal chords connecting the strands of those permutations. The composition will be the stacking product. So if I want to compose this with that, I do it by stacking the right hand, the thing on the right on top of the left, on top of the thing on the left. And after stacking, I can slide the chords down if I wish, so that all the chords are below all the permutation. Okay? And again, I just defined the category PACD, or I just told you what it is, but it was forced. I had no choice. That's what comes out. Okay. The operation D0 back on brains meant add a strand on the far end. On core diagrams, it would be the same, you add a strand on the far end. The operation D4 in the case of a three-strand core diagram, would be add a strand on the far right. The interesting operations are the middle D's. So suppose I want to tell you how to bubble the middle strand. So how to apply D2. You replace the middle strand by two parallel strands, and then any cord that used to be connected to the middle strand gets replaced. You instead of connecting it to the middle two strand, you sum over all ways of connecting it to the two daughter strands. So if you have two cords connected to the middle strand, the summation will be a summation of four core diagrams. So again, I'm presenting the answer, but really there is a little claim hiding here, and the claim is that this is what the D2 of Braid induces on the associated gradient. So this is not the definition, this is a theorem. Okay? Maybe I'll skip what the S operations do because they're less crucial, and I'll also skip what the coproduct is, but I'll just tell you what would be the sort of base point. So the base point I will call R tilde, and the best way to define it is to say that it is x times the exponential of h over 2, where x is this parenthesized core diagram, and h is this parenthesized core diagram. Let me be clear. This parenthesized core diagram has zero chords, so it would be completely zero. This parenthesized core diagram has one chord, so it's of degree one, and so exponentiating it makes sense. You get an infinite sum of increasing degrees, and in a completion it would make sense. Also, if you want to know what R tilde looks like, so R tilde will always have an x at the bottom, and then basically a product of h's. So it will look like this, where you have k horizontal chords. Well, the term with k horizontal chords you will take with coefficient 1 over k factorial 2 to the k, which the 2 because of the 1 half over here, and then you sum all as k goes from 0 to infinity, and this is our thing. Now, you can ask, where is it coming from? And the way I'm presenting it right now, it's an ansatz. I'm declaring that this is our kingdom. Okay? You can check that, in fact, there is no choice given here. So you can check that any expansion for parenthesized grades is forced to map sigma. So whatever expansion you use, sigma is automatically mapped into this R tilde. So this is forced as well. Okay. And then there are relations. Oh, sorry. And I'm not sure I'm showing this. So I'm running out of time. Or wait, am I? How much time do I have?
You can keep going if you want. As much as
so, wait, I've run out of time already, haven't I?
How much more time would you need?
Lots. Well, I suppose I'm supposed to continue. I could continue tomorrow, but I really wanted to talk about something else tomorrow. So,
I guess we could have a popular vote.
You know, I have to say, you tell me, so how much time do I need? You know, I could sketch the continuation, maybe the very, very quick sketch is the following. So I could tell you that B is finite, so I told you what B is, but it's actually finitely generated. It's generated by only two elements, sigma and A. So if you want to consider
construct an expansion is enough to tell its values on sigma and on a. The value on sigma was declared. So the only remaining quantity is the value on A. The value on A is a certain element on the right-hand side, and it's what is called an associator. So an associator is an element on the right-hand side which satisfies the relations that A satisfies on the left-hand side. These relations are written over here. So this makes it completely explicit what an expansion is, and also what is an associator, and the relations are written over here. And then, likewise, I could tell you what GRT is. So GRT would be the automorphisms of the right-hand side. And for this, I need to present the right-hand side using generators and relations. The generators are written here, the relations are written here, and it follows that elements of GRT are basically images of the generators which satisfy the relations. So it's whatever is written over here. And in some sense, that completes the explanation of what associators GT and GRT are. But then there is a theorem, and the theorem is that the projections from associators to degree m to associators to degree m minus 1 is surjective. I already talked about it in the Bailey case. This means that you can actually construct associators, not just imagine them. And the proofs involves a sort of more detailed study of this picture. So I think I need at least half an hour. Probably the right thing to do is to quit.
Maybe ask some questions.
Okay, maybe then we'll quit for today.
I should sort of, the organizers should stay in the room and we should continue talking and